Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Night Search. Join me, George Breckman, and we're expecting Eddie Middleton to come along any minute here as my co-host. On Night Search, we search along the hidden edges of reality in our human experience. We get into UFOs, extraterrestrial contact experience, the real, mostly unknown origins of religions, governments, secret societies, and the occult. Join us here on Night Search on Blog Talk Radio every weekday night, 6 to 7, or in the case of tonight, 6 to 7:30 Central Standard Time, as we probe the human condition, how we can live better, work better, and help evolve a different and better world in these pivotal years of the first decades of our 21st century. Now I'd like to introduce tonight's guest, Dale Pond. Dale has been a free energy and alternate energy researcher since the early 1980s. He is a frequent contributor. There's a couple of clips of him up on YouTube, which is what first attracted my attention to him, where he's talking about John Keeley's inventions and some of the remarkable stuff that was even going on in the 19th century in the way of alternative energy use, the evolving technology that's coming out, which would get us off fossil fuels. Welcome, Dale. How's it going tonight?
Very well, thank you. I'm glad to be on your show.
Well, thanks, Dale. And tell us a little bit about how long this movement's been going on, how many people have started looking into it, and generally, what is the history of this alternative energy movement that's been going on?
Well, from my experience with it, there wasn't much happening until the early 1980s. There were, before that, there were individuals who were researching it and publishing newsletters and stuff like that. But it didn't get to be a movement until the creation of the International Tesla Society in 1983. And they started having their conferences. And then the whole thing just took off. And there must be tens of thousands of people around the world working in various areas of the alternative energy now. And that's good, because even though I used to know everybody, now I hardly know anybody, but it's good. There's so many people trying so many new things and different things, and that's what we need. Everybody to get out of the box and build something.
Welcome. Here's our co-host, Eddie Middleton. Good evening, Eddie.
Yes. I'm sorry I was 2 minutes late.
Oh, don't worry about it. It's fine. Dale was just filling our audience in on how the free energy movement has progressed and how he's a member of the International Tesla Society. So you guys are basing it to some extent on the pioneering work done by Nikola Tesla. There were some other giants back there, like the one I caught your lecture on, John Keeley, Stirling, as in the Stirling engine, all kinds of devices out there. How credible are these devices?
Well, there were a number of them that worked over the years, over the century and a half that we first started hearing about this stuff. And the problem has been the inventors could not really explain in terms of other people could understand how their devices worked. And if they tried to get into the market or into a position to where they could market these things, they were shut down one way or another. So it's been kind of an uphill battle to get this out into the public. The public's not really aware of it very much. I mean, there's this movement that's aware, but the general public, the only thing they're concerned about is flipping a switch on the wall and having power. They're not concerned about how to get it better or cheaper or you know, have free energy. So
I'm sure the public would, however, like to be able to do it without, you know, nuclear plants that could end up having a catastrophic failure like the one that happened in Fukushima, Japan, and spewing nuclear radiation all over the place, or coal-fired plants, which are putting out tons of CO2 every day, or without our continually having to, you know, be occupying foreign countries and worrying about oil shipments from other places that may not have our best interests at heart. And they would like to get us off that if it were presented that way.
Yeah, sure, nobody wants pollution. Nobody wants this nightmare that they've created out there. I've talked to some people. high up in the oil industry, and they admit amongst themselves at their own meetings that they have created a technological monster that they can no longer control. They can't manage it. It's gotten so complex and so expensive and so huge that they're all being backed into a corner, and they don't know what to do. And believe me, they do want to change that whole scenario, but they don't know what to do about it.
Simplest suggestion, seems like they could take their billions and invest them in the kind of thing you're working on and the kind of thing, for instance, that Howard Johnson motor, something like that, something like the Stirling motor, which instead, Texaco or Shell that actually took that off the market, bought all the patents so only they could make it. If you can, of course, buy plans and build your own, but it's like they've gone to great lengths to suppress alternative energy sources that would be quite benign.
Yeah.
And they could just get in there and own it.
Huh. There's that. It's the old greed and power thing, you know. If they can't control it, it's not going to get out in the public. That's their philosophy.
Well, I guess that's the thing, too, is that this kind of technology would be very decentralized, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, but supposing you had a free energy machine and it was a standalone unit and it was simple and economical and affordable and reliable, and you wanted to make, 10,000 of them and sell them to your friends and neighbors, they'd be all over you. They would shut you down in a heartbeat.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid you're right. They probably would do exactly that. So yeah. Go ahead, Eddie.
Just want to know what hope there is that they can ever get this out to the public. Then it's just going to be this kind of situation from now on, that they control everything and just continue to make their billions of dollars on the polluting fuels.
Well, my opinion of it, of the future, is number one, there are tens of thousands of people working on these things all over the planet in their garages and their basements and their attics. And these are all different systems. And when these finally start to come out, when the public is finally ready to have these things, there are going to be a multitude of different kinds of systems being introduced. And the big systems, well, we get into politics and all that kind of stuff, but I believe personally that the system that these power mongers put in place is collapsing around their ears right now. And at some date in the not too far future, it will probably completely collapse, and that will be an opportunity for these devices to make their way into the markets all over the world, not just in one place. It'll happen everywhere, all at once.
Yeah, that's easy to imagine. Sure.
If it
now,
wasn't
when you
like,
say collapse,
how else can
well,
it
I mean,
be?
What,
I don't know how else it could happen.
I mean, what in your opinion could actually cause the, I mean, I could see certainly a general economic collapse, but as far as the oil companies, people with that much power, that much money, don't they just pick up their marbles and go play in a different sandbox? I mean, do they really risk collapse? I wonder.
Yeah.
The oligopolists are pretty much the only people kind of insulated from collapse. They can just go and, market something else or back something else.
Well, you got to understand the economics. They got a huge organization. Just pick any oil company. They got hundreds of billions of dollars in investment in their infrastructure and people and plants and machinery and everything. They have to sell a certain amount of petroleum products every month to keep that system going. If the economic system collapses, which everybody's predicting it will, that whole machine is going to fall apart. They will not be able to maintain their system in full operation.
Yeah, now that I could see. Yeah.
So that opens the door for local people to build these machines locally and replace what's not there anymore with their own systems.
Well, let's talk about what goes into replacing it. I mean, I have, I'm a web surfer. And I'm tantalized by the idea of something like this Howard Johnson motor, which looks like, as best I can tell, something similar to Chapeller's Tespaticon that he started working on in 1928. And it was a simple magnetic drive. How many of these things are actually feasible? Could a home inventor actually put together and make fly?
It's highly unlikely, because most people can't even use a screwdriver properly, much less build a complex, precise machine. It takes a certain amount of machine tools and expertise to build some of this stuff. And, you know, it's got to be reliable, so they got to build it right. And I see a lot of people out there trying to duplicate, for instance, that Rohner plasma gas thing. And those gases are very expensive to acquire. It takes a lot of expertise and training to make sure you can use it right. And to build the machine that uses those gases, you got to have a small machine shop. I mean, there's not too many people around who could master all that. I'm not throwing a wet blanket on it. I'm just saying some of these things are far more difficult than a lot of people think they are.
Why couldn't an independent manufacturer, getting enough investors, actually start making some machine like a car that would run on this free energy and market it at a reasonable price? Is there anything illegal about that?
Not that I know of. But of course, it depends on the system they want.
Free enterprise system. I mean, we have a free enterprise system.
Well, not really.
Well, I mean, what kind of law could they invoke to shut someone down that was enterprising enough and had the funds to start a manufacturing plant to build, you know, cars that run on water or whatever, you know, that's free energy? Well, how would they shut them down?
Well, for instance, there was some guy in Ohio that did power his vehicle off of biofuel, which was, you know, recycled cooking oil, and they taxed him for all the time he didn't buy taxable gasoline.
No.
Can you believe that? Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah, so if they can find a way to shut if they want to shut you down, they will shut you down, and it doesn't matter what the law says.
That might not be above actually murdering some people. I've heard that, too.
Yeah, that's happened, too. And they steal everything they got and destroy them one way or the other. So it's not all negative. You know, we're talking negative stuff. The other issue, another issue of this is, I don't see out there in the community, the new energy community, anyone that fully, completely, clearly understands how these systems work. There's lots of ideas and there's lots of books being written, but I don't see anybody who's saying they know exactly how it works. So that's the other problem, and that's the problem I've devoted my 30 years of effort towards, is okay, this stuff does exist. How does it happen? How can we engineer this stuff from the get-go and have it work? That's what engineering is all about. And we don't have that data yet. We're getting close to it, but we're not there yet. Maybe somebody out there's got something someplace that I don't know about. But generally speaking, what you see on the web is just a bunch, you know, nobody's got the information.
So, Dale, if I understand you, then there's really nothing you can put your hands on right now, whether it's the Howard Johnson magnetic drive motor or the, Mucci, whatever that one's called, which is an over-unity device where you common shaft it to an electric motor and start with a very tiny input on your motor, and then you're going over-unity very quickly and you turn into a generator. There's really nothing like that that a homeowner, for example, who's, let's say, is reasonably good. He works on his own car. He's got pretty good idea which end of a screwdriver's up. There's really nothing like that a guy like that could grab and make work at the present.
Well, there's some systems that kind of sort of work, like the Brown's gas and the HHO systems, and there's a lot of talk about this guy or that guy or the other guy's got it working and well enough to have his car run on it. But where's the plans? Where's the clear-cut plans that Joe homeowner could download off the internet for $19.95 and build a system and make it work? There's so much greed and paranoia and fear in this movement that it's stifling itself. These people are going to have to open up and start working together in groups and pull some of these plans together and get one hammered out and get all the bugs worked out of it and get a plan out there for $19.95 or a kit for $49.95 or something.
Sure.
That's verifiable that Joe homeowner can actually do it. And I don't see that happening. I see a lot of people talking about that happening, but I don't see anybody doing it.
So it sounds
legitimately.
Like
there's a lot of ads out there you can buy, but they don't work.
So a lot of the problem is internal. People in the movement itself are just not cooperating with each other and are not making it possible for this stuff to come forward.
Well, yeah, they're going to have to start.
If we didn't have those obstacles, in your opinion, what is, if there is one, a legitimate, working, feasible system that could be put into place right now? Didn't Tesla actually have some devices that were free energy devices that did work?
Well, you know, the books talk about he had this car, a Pierce Arrow, that he drove around. And, you know, there's a lot of stories about some of these guys had machines that worked. There's that one in Switzerland that's been working for 30 or 40 years. And,
and
until the people are ready.
Switzerland is in some little co-op up there. It's like some little Christian community, and they have, I think it is a magnetic motor, though, isn't it? It's very similar to Schaeffler's Testaticon that was invented in Germany, you know, or in Austria, I guess, 50 years earlier?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that story, but the one they got in Switzerland does work, has worked, thousands of engineers have seen it working, but they claim that the world's not ready for it yet, and it's obvious the world's not ready for it because we don't have it. Now, as soon as the people are ready, which means they're ready to start talking and working with each other, we're not going to have this.
Well, I don't understand how the world going to be. I mean, if I'm the Swiss government and I'm sitting up here on a banking empire that can't be doing as well as it used to since the privacy laws have been stripped away. Now, the Bahamas is the place that people with a lot of money go and hide their assets. You know, there are other countries which have become a refuge since now the BFI and other snoop agencies can get into whatever an American or a Brit or anybody else puts into a Swiss bank account. It no longer has the sanctity it once had. If I'm the Swiss government, I'm going to say, hey, look, we have got something unique. Nobody else in the world has it. We're going to back it governmentally, go into a joint venture, and let's become the world center of manufacturing these things. I just don't see why that wouldn't happen. And there's no downside to it for a country that's got advanced manufacturing facilities, which they certainly do, and a lot of great technicians, again, which
yeah.
they certainly do.
Well, they have the potential to pull that off if they decide they want to pull it off, but they haven't decided to do that. And the Swiss people haven't demanded it, and their government is too busy hiding people's money or whatever it is they do over there, instead of building machines to help people. That's what
well,
I'm talking about.
Fine,
until the people
chocolate.
Are ready and they're willing to step out there and take some of the money they've stashed away in these bank accounts and start applying it towards solutions, we aren't going to have the solutions. We're going to keep perpetuating the same BS that's been going on.
So you're saying that the Testaticon, which is basically what that device in Switzerland is called, I've seen a video on it, does work. Are there any, and I caught something a few years ago, you're probably familiar with it, Dale, since you're in the field, this engineer in Japan has a device where, I mean, they actually showed where it's operating commercial HVAC machinery, and these are apparently being sold in Japan right now, but it's an over-unity device. You start your system with it, and it's kind of self-operating after that. You disengage your shaft after you get it started. Is there going to be a future for over-unity devices? By the way, audience, just for those of you who aren't technically oriented, an over-unity device is where, let's say, I put in 2 amps, and I get a small motor going. The motor turns a shaft, and then the shaft operates some sort of free energy generator, which is basically pulling out perhaps 0 point energy, and it's producing something way higher than that 2 amps, which was necessary to feed back into keeping that motor going, so I can disconnect the motor and it runs on its own. That's the theory behind an over-unity device. Are those working in Japan on a wide scale, or is it just isolated?
I don't really know, but I would presume that it's very isolated. There's a lot of forces arrayed against these types of machines coming out. You got to keep that in mind. There's a lot of people don't want to see this happen. I mean, they are adamant. They don't want to see it happen. So we're going to have to use guerrilla marketing to get them on the market and survive the whatever happens. I have heard rumors of many different machines out there that are actually working. I don't personally know of any that I've seen with my own two eyes. but the people I've questioned are impeccable, and if they say so, then I go with that. So there's a lot of them out there.
Give us an example of the principles behind the ones we're talking about. I mean, currently, if we're speaking of conventional generation, power generation, we're talking about running a magnet, usually an electromagnet, past a copper coil, and in this way, a current is generated, and the a brush, which is like a contact across which something moving can go, transfers it to a wire, which carries off the current that you've thereby generated. Now, whether you run these things with wind or steam power or, you know, a coal-fired power plant, a nuclear power plant does nothing but heat water, and the water goes to steam, and the steam turns the turbine, and the turbine operates this brush system, this magnet across the wire system, at whatever scale. Is there anything else? Is there anything which is going to generate it in a different way that is on the drawing boards right now?
Well, there's a number of systems out there that what you describe is the conventional system. That's the way they do it today. That's the way they've been doing it for 100 years.
Right.
Now, there are lots of theoretical work that says, well, let's look at where electricity originates or comes from. Can we tap into the source of the electricity, not just a magnet going through a field? And there's been a lot of work with that. They call it scalar technology or scalar potential, tapping the scalar forces. And Tom Bearden talks a lot about that, and some of the other guys like Bedini and so on. And that seems to be incredibly promising. Bedini claims to have a machine that works using that type of idea.
The
Statica machine in Switzerland, I think, works with that basic concept. There's another school of thought that the one I'm pursuing is there are natural vibrations throughout the universe, and all we need to do is build a machine that is sympathetically entangled with those forces, and it will drive the machine.
That's juicy. Okay. Tell us a little bit about how that works. I'm all ears.
Well, when I was living in Tulsa, we had this front door, wooden front door that had a knocker on the outside of it. And every time the UPS truck got within two blocks of the house, that knocker would rattle.
Okay.
But no other car would do that, except one friend had a little Chrysler, four-cylinder Chrysler, and it would knock, it would vibrate the front door knocker. That's called sympathetic vibration. So let's presume that instead of the UPS truck, we have a vibration out there in the universe someplace, a quasar or whatever, black hole, who knows what, putting out a certain frequency like that, and we could devise a device like the front door that would respond to that natural source of vibration in a similar fashion. Then that would drive a mechanical device, which we would attach to a generator, and there we have power that would not stop.
So you'd have a simple oscillator, basically, which you could work up to a bride gear and capture it and gear it down to where you get that 1760 RPM that you need to turn a generator.
Right, right. Now, there's all kinds of mechanics.
So how do you find this source? How do you hook up to that source? I mean, what would that source be? You know, getting vibrations from a quasar sounds a little far out. Maybe it's not.
Well, I just mentioned that as an idea, but there are countless sources of vibration in the universe. I mean, just countless. They're on the planet, they're off the planet, they're everywhere. And it's kind of like a background noise that you don't hear because you've always heard it all your life, so you've tuned it out. Well, there's cosmic rays, there's an oscillation between the Earth and the Sun. There's countless forms that this energy takes, but it's always manifests in the same way. It's what Walter Russell called the universal heartbeat.
Oh, I have read Walter Russell. I've got some of his books. I'll be darned. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we isolate one of these sources, and we build a machine to resonate with it.
Yeah.
You know, that might be some explanation of flying saucer technology, even.
Well, that's yet another school of thought. You know, you get into the neutral background of the universe, and that's how these waves propagate, by the way. And that's a whole other ball of wax. Tapping into the neutral center that Keeley tapped into in the 1880s is really where the big power is. That's truly unlimited power using that process.
Okay, give us a little bit of information now for our listeners about what the neutral center is, what we know about the neutral center, and you're not referring to the great attractor in the center of our own galaxy or anything like that when you speak of neutral center.
No, no. A neutral center, its simplest definition is a point of coincidental action. It's the point where different actions coincide. So, for instance, in a standard sound wave, you got a positive and negative phase. The place between those two phases is a neutral line. And this neutral line, every vibration has a neutral line. So everything in the universe vibrates, so these neutral lines are everywhere, and they can be tapped in everywhere. And we can differentiate this neutral center and have it break out into immense forms of energies. And some people erroneously refer to the neutral center as a zero point, and they're not the same things. Zero point is totally, but the neutral center has to do with the neutral energies of the universe, and those are the ones that Keeley tapped into and learned how to control to develop some of the machines he did. So really revolutionary.
Go into a little bit about Keeley, because that's a story a lot of people don't know, that we had our own guy who did some amazing stuff here, just like Tesla was to do later, only he was a little bit before Tesla's time.
Yeah, they were peers. You know, Keeley was in Philadelphia and Tesla was in New York at the same time. And Keeley pursued vibratory phenomena and Tesla pursued electrical phenomena. And in Keeley's work, he did some really phenomenal stuff. He was able to levitate extremely heavy machines. Supposedly he built some flying machines. He could fly around Philadelphia. He was splitting the atom in the 1880s all by himself.
Wow.
Yeah, he
And what happened to all of John Keeley's documentation? By the way, folks, that is K-E-E-L-Y, and there is a forum site, whatever. I guess it's really like a collection of articles out there, but there's a forum attached to it. If any of you ever want to go and check it out on your own, called KeeleyNet, K-E-E-K-E-E-L-Y.
Oh, no, we're not associated with the KeeleyNet. That's totally different.
I didn't say you were. I was just pointing out that is out there for people that are interested in Keeley's work. I've checked it out and had some interesting stuff.
Yeah, we have constructed the SVP Wiki, which contains almost all of the Keeley information. All the information we have digitized so far is in the svpwiki.com, and you can read his history and the chronology and all of his hundreds of machines that this man made. Staggering amount of machines. He was too far ahead of his time. He was creating electricity.
I guess what I have to come back when we're talking about Tesla or Keeley, one of two things has to have happened. Either their plans have to have disappeared, or we're just choosing not to build it because we have better materials now to work with. They didn't have nitrile at that time, for example. They didn't have a lot of the other stuff we have for seals. They didn't have Inconel. They didn't have a lot of the materials we have. Material science has just taken a leap and a bound past them. Electronics has been greatly miniaturized from the great big old capacitors they had in the 1880s. So why haven't we been able to, anybody, use this stuff or build any of this stuff that Keeley built?
Well, in Keeley's case, I can give you a pretty good rundown on it because I spent 30 years trying to do exactly what you're saying. Keeley had a different paradigm. His paradigm was fundamentally and drastically different than the conventional orbiting electron concept, and apparently his concept was closer to the truth than the standard model because he was able to do all this stuff working by himself. And I have spent all these years trying to really, truly understand what his paradigm was, and we've made a lot of progress. And it is vastly different. And it is fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. For instance, Keeley could draw a symbol on the wall, and the machine across the room would start. He
what?
Understood.
Drawing
he understood the connection
wall.
Between the mind and the mechanics. And it's only now, today, in today's world, we're only beginning to look at this thing called mind. What is this mind force that he was harnessing in his machines, and how does it work, and how did he do it? And,
he had a mentally activated machine.
Yeah.
In the 1880s.
Right.
Amazing.
That might be way some of these flying saucers get around, you know?
Yeah, it's something akin to that, that's for sure.
So, gosh, I've never even heard of this guy, man. I'm totally intrigued. I want to check more this out. You know, some website
so
we'll give out for us
again. It was svpwiki.net, is that correct?
.com,
okay. svpwiki.com, okay.
S-V-P. Yeah.
And that stands for, what does ESVP stand for? I remember you told me.
Sympathetic Vibratory Physics.
Okay, Sympathetic Vibratory Physics. All right. Wow.
Yeah, and we've compiled works from many different people in this wiki because so many of these people like Tesla and Russell and Casey and numerous other people have developed devices like this, but they use different jargons. So I wanted to sort out all these jargons and come up with a common jargon we can all use and relate to so we can get on with making these machines work instead of arguing about words, which a lot of people do.
For sure.
Yeah. So let's sort all that out and get to the very basic fundamental principles that these people worked with. And let's get on with it.
Well, I've just got to ask you this. You know, Dale, you seem to have just a very diverse background in physical science, mechanics, electronics. What is your, you know, from what angle did you come at this? From what kind of training and background did you come at this kind of work?
You had to ask that.
Well, yeah.
I don't really have a formal trained background. Forever interested in science and how the universe worked, and I stumbled on Keeley and says, my gosh, this is the guy I'm going to study. And through me studying his work, I've had to learn many different fields because the man worked in all kinds of fields. And if you can't, you just got to dig into it. There's quantum acoustics, for instance, which is a new field. Now that today they're talking about quantum entanglement. Well, that's sympathetic vibration is quantum entanglement, same thing.
Sure.
They just call it a different name. That's why I want to sort these languages out so we can all talk to each other.
Now, at Keeley's time, I mean, he would have been basing his work probably, I'm just guessing here, basing on the time, on the ether theory, which is what physics was following in the latter part of the 19th century, where it was assumed that there was this common ether, this invisible soup in which everything was, and that you and I and the desk in front of me and the broadcast console in front of me, these things are solid because they have more of that soup in them, but they're all part of, everything is made of this same kind of ether, and therefore we can transmit stuff through the ether, thoughts can go through the ether, we can affect things at a distance through the ether. It really allowed for a lot of the same sorts of things that we now speak of quantum mechanics.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked about the ether.
On an atomic particle basis, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about that because the ether from that time period, the Victorian industrial age, if you go back and read all the papers you can on the ether and what everybody's talking about, you'll find out pretty quick that everybody's describing a different feel of the elephant. And in those days, they did not believe that the atom was divisible. They maintained that the atom was indivisible. So there had to be something else permeating atoms and surrounding atoms, and they called that ether. On today's jargon, we refer to that as the quantum world, you know, this quantum soup that permeates everything with hundreds of different quantum particles. Well, that explains all these different definitions of ether that came up 100 years ago, because there's all these different particles that were behaving in different ways. So there wasn't one ether. There was multitudes of different kinds of ether. And that's a breakthrough because it breaks that whole thing down into something we can deal with. So Keeley was taking water, and he was breaking water into hydrogen, oxygen. Then he would break the hydrogen, oxygen into its constituent parts, which were quantum particles, electrons, protons, neutrons. And then he would break those up into gluons and quarks and things. So he was working with a highly refined, very specific type of ether that he used to power his machines.
He was doing this without a collider and without the extremely high power requirements of somebody like CERN or any of these other big collider projects that only governments can afford to operate.
Yeah, he was doing it in a little tiny shop in Philadelphia.
How on earth would you do that?
He saw the structure of these things as being different, and he even explains how he did it. He says these things will rotate around each other, and if you extend the range of rotation beyond four times its diameter, the thing will come apart. And he says you do that by injecting a frequency, you know, the correct frequency, to get this range of motion to extend itself, and it'll just come apart all by itself. You didn't need a collider. All you needed was a violin and a few resonators.
Think of all that money that the Swiss and Europeans could have saved at CERN. And they've certainly got enough unemployed violinists. That would be a real bargain.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they got a multi-gazillion dollar system going on over there, and they're sitting there saying, we're not going to let that little test attic get out because it'd make us look stupid.
Yeah, I can see where it would have that effect.
Keeley had something that actually flew around in Philadelphia?
Yeah, that's the word. You know, all we have are magazine and newspaper articles from that time period. And he built this machine. In fact, we have one article where it says he was building a flying machine that was 60 feet long. And then we don't have any more articles. We don't know what happened. Did he actually get this thing finished? Did he fly it? You know, we don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
He was just in time for the great airship flap of 1897? Or did he die before that? I'm thinking he didn't last that long.
He died in 1898.
Well, he probably wasn't up there in the last year of his life, but somebody certainly had something flying around this country. There was a big, that was our first, you'd say, big UFO flap, was these flying boats that appeared in 1897 all over the country.
Starting
out
was
San Francisco area.
He was doing what he called it aerial navigation, and he was doing that in the early 1890s or maybe even 1880s.
So do you think, Dale, that you'll actually be able, or somebody will be able to actually eventually tease out what it is that that Keeley was working on and start making practical models out of it?
Yeah, I think so. There's people working around the world with his science trying to make it work. I know of several people who are seriously working with it, including myself, and from the gut feeling of what I think might be happening is, yeah, we're going to get this figured out if we can not be interfered with, and if we can get some funding. Those two things. If we can keep the bad guys at bay and get some money in here, we can do these things.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it gets down to, again, to political will and funding as much as anything else, huh?
Yeah, well, we don't need the politics. We just need people who want to get it done and are willing to do what's necessary to get it done.
Well, when I say political will, that's exactly what I'm referring to, is the mass will to see this kind of device get out there, the real need to see it happen.
You know, everybody's talking about it and everything, but you don't see a lot of people devoting their lives and their fortunes to it. And that's what's got to happen.
So this sort of research is just being underfunded wherever it's going on. Now, where are you doing your work? What part of the country are you in?
I'm in southeast Colorado.
Oh, okay. It seems like Colorado has always been a bit of a hotbed for alternative energy and alternative science work.
Yeah, this is where they established the International Tesla Society, and they set up a couple of organizations to promote and support the alternative energy and the new energy and the free energy movements. And Tesla was out here in 1900. You know, he did his transmission of electricity out here.
Sure did. And I think the first city that big scale got powered up on this side of the Atlantic was Colorado Springs, right? Seems like Tesla did a big demonstration project there for his alternating current.
Yeah, he came out here. He was hired by some miners to develop a pumping system to pump the water out of some mines in Telluride and Cripple Creek and Victor. And I guess while he was out here, he figured this was a really good place to try his transmitting of electricity experiments. So he set up a big lab in Colorado Springs. And, yeah, he was a big deal out here.
Now, you mentioned scalar as being one of the ways that this could go, one of the ways that free energy might be found. For the sake of our audience, go into a little bit, what is scalar? What is a scalar wave? How do we know that apart from regular other types of energies?
Well, the simple definition of scalar is you can't see it or measure it or even know it's there. It's like a potential. It's like a big tank of water filled with water, and so the water contained in the tank would be a potential energy. So if you open the faucet at the bottom of the tank, you have this jet of water coming out, and you could put a water wheel in there and get your power from it. So scalar is very similar to that in that we know these energies are out there in immense quantities. Can't even measure them. Some of them are so immense. The trick has been, well, how do you identify it? How do you tap into it so that we can open the faucet? And last year I had an epiphany about all this, and I said, you know, Keeley worked with all this mind force and everything. Well, you can't measure mind force or anything. Mind forces are scalar forces. So he figured out how to tap into that, and it's an immense power. And it's, for instance, the light coming from the sun. It doesn't really come from the sun, but everybody thinks it does. And we can't see it. You cannot see the light coming from the sun. You can only see the light once it strikes a molecule. And then you can see objects all around you, but you can't see the light itself. So that's a scalar force. Keeley called that a harmonic force, and because it's bound up harmonically and it's not differentiated. So the trick is to differentiate it, and the way you do that is you stick a prism in front of the sunlight and you get this rainbow of colors. So those are the basic frequencies held within the scalar structure, and they can be used for different things. Same thing with electrical force, or all these forces. They're all coming from a scalar source. So the source of free energy, the source of alternative energy is going to be a scalar source. And the trick has been, how do you open that tap? And that's what a lot of people are working on that, believe me.
Well, it's just going to be a matter of setting up a passive system with basically a very large antenna, because I've heard people speculate that scalar waves would be humongous, very, very long, and then condensing it, converting it, changing it into usable power. Or do we have to do something to get to that? Does it take a certain input of power to be able to create power from scalar?
Well, it depends on the system you're going to use to do that. There again, we're back into the jargon business. You know, people, there are so many definitions to what scalar is. It's almost like trying to define ether. You know, there's 100 different definitions out there, and which one's right? Well, the right one's the one you can use. So it depends on the system you're going to use to differentiate that source into a usable form. It's got to take on a polar state. If you don't have a polar state, you got nothing. So the idea is to differentiate it until you have these two polar states or more. And from that, you can gain access to this universal heartbeat, and then the whole thing opens up. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
It's like two kids.
It does if you're science-minded. I don't know about, you know, there are so few people in this country who actually have gotten a good science education. People, especially a lot of New Agers we encounter in our work in radio and elsewhere, just throw out the words quanta this and quanta that and quantum this. And they don't even understand what quanta is, where it came from. Most of them have never had a physics class. And anytime they want to explain something, it's absolutely preposterous or quite often untrue. They'll say, well, quantum physics proves it. And I'm going, no, it doesn't. You know.
Yeah, there's
does not prove that you survive bodily death. It does not prove that your pet can talk to you. It does not prove that there are angels or any of that stuff. It deals with quanta, specific packets of energy at a subatomic level. And it doesn't even necessarily extrapolate beyond the subatomic level, you know.
Well, and part of my work has been to classify and categorize and organize all this stuff and come up with some kind of paradigm to make some sense. And in that process, for instance, Keeley talked about seven different levels of matter and energy. You got the molecules, and you got the atoms, and you got the electrons, and you got photons, and you got quarks. All of these, for instance, the molecules made of atoms, atoms are made of electrons, electrons are made of photons, photons are made of quarks. So you keep going back, you keep breaking these particles into finer and finer particles until you wind up with seven levels. And Keeley also said that he suspected there were more levels, but his machinery, he could not make a machine enough to separate them. And at the highest level, the seventh level, which he called the compound interetheric, you know, the particles that make up the ether particles, he said those are mind particles. That's what mind is. That's what consciousness is. And we can engineer with these, and he did. He made these machines that operated when he drew a symbol on the wall.
Wow.
And so mind is, it's not a nebulous energy out there. He actually identified it. And then he made machines to measure the power of a single thought. So here's a man who broke this whole thing down, and this knowledge is there. It's in the wiki. We put it in the wiki. If you got an open mind and you're really curious and you want to work your butt off, it's right there for anybody to read it. And that's where we're going. You know, that's where this paradigm has taken us. We got this machine that people come up to it and they feel love and they feel warmth and they feel joy and they feel happy. And I'm saying, okay, this is
a killing machine.
Where did all this come from?
You've got a machine that generates positive energy where people feel positive mind states when they're near your machine. Is that correct?
That's right. We've had
it sounds like you could fund your research just by selling those machines. How many places would like to have one of those? I mean,
a lot of people like having them. The problem is it costs so much to make them. People have accused me of stealing, you know, charging too much money. I said, go to your local machine shop and ask them how much they charge per hour. And it runs somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 an hour, and you're going to spend months building this thing. And so I've taken it upon myself to build it myself, and I don't charge myself $100 because I don't have $100. And it costs, you know, we build these things on consignment. They're not on the shelf for sale. You know, somebody's got to order it. And they're running $35,000. And I'm not making money. I don't get any paycheck out of that.
And how big is this machine of yours?
It'll fit in a 2x2x2 foot box.
Wow.
And it's very heavy.
Wow, man. Great. You know, this sounds like something similar to what you've done. You actually have these machines that you actually sell to people?
Well, we make them for people, yeah.
I can see at $35,000 why that's not a consignment-only item. So do you plug this item in, or you just sit it there and it works on free energy? How does this work?
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't work. It doesn't work like you're thinking it works. It just sits there on the table, and it pumps out this energy. And many different people have described it in many different ways. Some have called it love. Some have called it joy or peace or softness or warmth or, you know, a multitude of descriptions. And we've seen people being healed in all different kinds of ways by it. It just sits there. Now, ultimately, when we finally get this figured out, these things are supposed to rotate using that universal heartbeat I told you about. Mm-hmm. And they will generate, for instance, Keely attached a rope to the shaft of one of these things, two-ton breaking point, and the machine slowly rotated and tightened up this rope and snapped a rope and didn't change its motion one iota. Now, that's a lot of horsepower.
Yeah, it sure is. That's a lot of, at the shaft, torque.
Yeah, that's a lot of torque. So eventually we're going to get to that. We're not there yet. But in the meantime, in the meantime, these machines are sitting there.
You have these machines, will you demonstrate for people sometimes when they come to your laboratory or your workshop?
Yeah, we have one here, and we get visitors all the time, and they're welcome to experience this energy and see what it feels like, and they're all amazed. It's just amazing. It is. It's an amazing thing.
And last question about that. Do you ever go or do speaking engagements where you take one of these machines to demonstrate?
We used to do more than we're doing now because they're heavy, and usually got to move it all around by myself, and I don't really go to conferences too much anymore. But, yeah, we've taken it to the TESA conferences and USPA conferences, and so people can see it and experience it and get to know about it. You know, there's another energy out there that we can build machines with that's not electricity and magnetism. And also, I wanted to introduce people to this because they're not used to thinking about this. You know, engineers are taught electricity and magnetism, and that's all they're taught.
Correct.
Well, there's a whole lot more out there than that.
Tell us about this other energy. I know Thomas Edison referred to that other energy as etheric energy. What do you call it?
Well, you can use that term. You can also call it love energy. You could call it mind energy or consciousness energy or heart energy, scalar energy.
Now, the ETs use this kind of energy, but they call it BRIND, BRIND.
Vril. Yeah, I don't think mankind's ready for Vril yet.
Back a long time ago, they called it Vril. That's right. That was the Tibetan character for it. It was Vril. Vril, but the ETs actually call it Brind, BRIND, which produces that kind of effect. And in fact, the devices that do it cost about, I think the most expensive one would be about $1,200, nowhere near the range that yours is. Now, you speak of spontaneous healing. How long does somebody have to be exposed to your device, and with what kind of condition has it produced a cure?
Well, first off, neither this machine nor its technology heals anybody. Nobody heals anybody but themselves.
All right.
And what the machine does do is it creates this really neat field that not everybody can feel, but a lot of people feel it.
Right.
And it reminds you of what your original field is like. And when you remember that, when you get that feeling, oh, yeah, I remember this feeling, then you let go of all the BS that you're dragging around and creating all these diseases. Like I said, it's a whole other paradigm. It's not new. This paradigm's been around a long, long time. Keely just managed to bring it into a useful, practical format that we can deal with. So everybody heals themselves.
George, that sounds similar to the shamanic healing, where they go back and undo the threads or, you know, something to do with that, maybe. I don't know.
Well,
yeah.
For
instance, Albert Hubbard, the guy who started Dianetics, his original work is absolutely in line with Keeley's work. And Hubbard said that people maintain these thought forms in their bodies, and these thought forms will manifest as a disease in the body. And he said, you go in and you break up these thought forms, and the body heals itself. Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly what Keeley said. That's exactly what Quimby said in the 1860s, who healed 12,000 people using that same process. So the whole idea is to bring people back into a state of harmony, which some people describe as love. You know, you just get this incredibly wonderful feeling. And when you have that and you maintain it in your thought and in your mind, your heart and your body, you don't, nothing's going to bother you. You're not going to get sick. And if you are sick...
Who did you just mention that killed 12,000 people in 1860?
Quimby. Q-U-I-M-B-Y.
Right. Phineas Parkhurst Quimby. And interestingly, one of the people he healed in the 1860s was Mary Baker Eddy.
She was so impressed
at what he did that she studied his work, she studied with him, and then she went out and started that Church of Christ Scientists.
Christian Science.
Although from my perspective, I don't think she quite got it right, because they're not really healing everybody, but Quimby healed everybody.
Wow.
Now, was Quimby doing this scientifically, or is he just doing it through mind force, basically?
Well, I mean, from his perspective, it was total 100% scientifically, because he could explain it, he could show it, he could repeat it over and over and over again. Well, how scientific do you want? But he was doing it with his mind. And his process was that he would feel in his body, he was a very sensitive person, he could feel in his body what his patient was feeling. And then he would look at it in his body, and then he would go into the patient and say, well, we see this, that, and the other thing. And that was his proof to his patient that he was for real, because he could describe to them exactly what they were experiencing. And then he said, and this is the key to the whole thing, he said, every disease, every illness is caused by a belief. And he said at the core of every belief is an idea. So he would go into this person's mind, and he would search back in their history, and he'd find the belief. He said, well, you're holding this belief, whatever it is. And he says, that belief came from when you were a kid and your mom said X, Y, or whatever. And that started this whole process that resulted in this condition you've got right now. And he would talk them out of the idea, and he'd say, the idea is nonsense. And when they finally realized that's all it was, well, then they let go of the idea, the belief is unsupported, and disease disappears. And he did that 12,000 times. Now, how many times did he do it to prove it?
He was pretty much treating it as a psychosomatic origin.
According to him, every disease or illness is psychosomatic.
Yeah.
Everyone. Yeah. Of course, today we're being bombarded by all those toxins and everything, so it might be different today, but that's the basic truth of it. In fact, I used that process 12 years ago to cure myself of a lifetime back problem.
Just by changing your thought patterns.
Right. And it was an instant cure. It was like a whole lifetime of agony and pain and suffering is gone in an instant.
Now, Dale, what do you call your device?
We call it a musical dynosphere.
Fascinating.
A musical what?
Dynosphere.
D-Y-N-A-T-R-E.
Yeah. Dynamic sphere. Musical dynamic sphere. Dynosphere.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow.
So, okay, people heal themselves, but your device makes it possible for them to do this. Does it take a lot of exposures, or is it basically almost an instant sort of?
Well, it varies. It varied a lot. You know, we had a lot of people come to our center in Tulsa because I wanted to see what was going on, and I told them, you guys are the guinea pigs, so I just want to see what happened. And we had people heal back problems, mental problems, emotional problems, every kind of problem. We even had doctors bring their patients in, and it was astounding what was happening. But not everybody experienced this, and not everybody who did told us. It's really strange.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But we saw amazing things, absolutely amazing things. I saw a lady come in one night, and she had just broken up with her boyfriend, and she was a wreck, total emotional wreck. And I said, well, just sit down over here on this little stool, and within minutes, she was radiant. She was smiling from ear to ear in total state of bliss.
So I guess one of the first things your machine does, your dynasty does, is to get rid of negative thoughts, negativity.
No, it doesn't get rid of anything. It doesn't zap anybody. All it does is creates this field, and when you're in the field, you can choose to accept that field and go with it, which means you're going to accept this feeling of love. See, love is what heals when you love yourself.
It sounds also like what Bruno Gröning is teaching people to tap into.
Yep. He's a pretty good guy, too, yeah. So if you can go with that feeling and feel yourself in this beautiful state of bliss and love, or you can ignore it, or you can fight against it. And we've had a couple of people get riled up and they left because they were afraid of it. They were feeling it and they became afraid of it. Because a lot of people were hurt by what they thought was love when they were kids. So now when they experience love, they're afraid of it, so they want to run away from it. But you want to go with it and allow yourself into it. And there's also the case of some people who are too sensitive and they start getting energized, too much energy. And when I see them do that, I ask them to go take a walk or go get a drink of water and come back. But too much too fast is not really a good thing.
So different levels of sensitivity have a lot to do with it.
What does?
I was going to mention about the crop circles. A lot of people report they walk inside those crop circles while they're still cooking. They feel the elation and affects their consciousness. Might be the same kind of thing there.
Yeah. Well, you know, love is everywhere. It's not just in this machine or those crop circles or, you know, it's everywhere. That's what runs the entire universe. That's another part of Keeley's paradigm. Everything's entangled. If every electron is identical to every other electron, no matter where it is, they're going to be sympathetically linked. They're going to be entangled, right? I mean, that's common sense. So everything in the universe is linked with this sympathetic energy. And today we can call it love, we can call it entanglement, we can call it sympathetic vibration.
But of course, and that could explain, of course, telepathic communication being instantaneous over great distances.
Yeah, that's part of it. And that sympathetic link with everything is this universal love that people have been talking about for centuries, but they weren't able to talk about in scientific terms. Well, guess what? We can today. And today we're saying it's quantum entanglement that links the universe. And that's the difference. That's the main difference between Keeley's paradigm, which allowed him to do what he did, as opposed to today's modern theory, which says everything is separate from everything else. They're totally opposite. And we know.
So basically, Keeley already had a unified theory, which is what physics has been working toward for quite some time ever since.
Right. He saw that the entire universe was unified through this sympathy. He called it sympathy. And all you had to do was work with that sympathy, meaning love. So you have to develop yourself if you want to work with these sciences. And you can start doing all these things. But if you come from the paradigm that everything is separate and there's chaos and there's fighting and warfare and hate, you can't do anything.
In terms of energy, what are mankind's options right now? How likely are we to actually develop something viable, sustainable, that gets us off, that gives us a real alternative to fossil fuels and to the other very questionable, expensive, and difficult to use technology of nuclear? Are wave, wind, solar, all of this getting more scalable, more able to provide mass use?
Well, it's like I was saying before. These industrialists, hang on, I got to change phones here.
Sure.
These industrialists who run the petroleum industries and all these big industries and everything, they've reached a point in consensus, and they all agree to this. And they have stated publicly amongst themselves that they have reached a place of non-return. They cannot manage the systems that they have built. They're too complex, they're too expensive. So, to answer your question, humanity as a whole has pushed what I call the Newtonian paradigm as far as it can be pushed. And the Newtonian paradigm is force times mass gives you work. So we're standing right now on a cusp of a whole new paradigm that leaps from the Newtonian concept to the scalar concepts, this working with mind force and the sympathy and the entanglement. We're standing on the cusp of this. And as soon as they can let go of the Newtonian brainwashing that they've had for the past 500 years, the sooner we can get on with this. But they fight it, and they fight it, and they fight it because they've been told that it's non-existent, love doesn't exist, and entanglement is just this tiny little thing they do in laboratories. And no, that's the way the universe is. And so we're right on this cusp, and we're going to break through this thing, and it's going to happen all over the world at the same time because of the Internet. And the inability of Newtonian science to address the problems that Newtonian science has created. We got to get a whole new science going here. And that's where we're at.
Could you comment on nuclear energy? Is that part of the energy of love or the opposite?
It's kind of like a bogus approach. You know, Keeley was liberating atomic energy in the 1880s, and he didn't kill himself or radiate Philadelphia or anything. And because he approached it in a different mindset, and the mindset is such that you can talk to these atoms. I'm saying it figuratively. You can vibrate these atoms, and they will gently open themselves up and release their energy. Now, the current nuclear philosophy is you get a bigger hammer, and you hit this thing as hard as you possibly can, and all these particles are scattered all over the place, and you're creating chaos. Well, that's a description of a nuclear explosion. It's chaos. So, no, you talk to these things, you serenade the atom, and it will release itself.
Well, I guess it's appropriate that Keeley worked in Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true.
I had thought about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Point. So what is the likelihood, in your opinion, that in the next decade, say, we're going to see free energy breaking out? It probably doesn't break out in this country because we're just way too controlled. We're way too unfree. Everything's run by oligopolies and industries. But is there somewhere that's going to be more friendly to this than here?
Well, we're not going to see any of this until the old system has collapsed, because the old system has invested heavily, and they're going to do everything they can to protect itself. So until that system collapses, we're not going to see any real free energy. We might see it here or there, but we're not going to see any big changes because everybody's invested in that system. If you don't own Exxon, you work for them. So until that mindset changes, until we stop killing each other because they talk different or they got a different belief system, until that's gone, because you just imagine for a minute what it would mean for the military-industrial complex to have free energy. There would be no stopping them. So until we stop building war machines with, you know, every technology that has ever come along has been weaponized. So if free energy
True.
Comes out there, they're going to weaponize it. They're going to put it in tanks and helicopters and drones, and we'll have all this crap everywhere. It'll be used for suppression and control instead of liberation.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that they already have it. I mean, that anti-gravity drive is probably based on some of the work done in Germany, you know, during and before the war. And some of the work done by Thomas Townsend Brown, or the devices based on that, are probably in use right now. These Phoenix lights, these large triangles, were probably U.S. Air Force properties. So I would say that if it came along, they would certainly use it. We would probably never hear about it.
Yeah, I believe that that's true. I believe they get a lot more stuff than anybody knows about.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, it certainly would not be offered for the good of all. You know, that's not happening. I guess the problem I have with your model, Dale, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is if everything collapses, we end up with a Mad Max sort of world, with little local despots and militias running around everywhere trying to enforce this or that pet belief system or exert local control for their own squeeze on resources, et cetera. And I don't think that puts us closer to having a stable sort of society that supports large-scale scientific research and more importantly, innovation, where you take that research and put it into products. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think we lose the infrastructure which would make this possible.
Yeah, except you're not taking into account the global awakening that's taking place. People are waking up all over the planet, and it's waking up at an exponential rate. And they are building alternative food sources, alternative money systems, alternative everything. So alternative energy is just around the corner, and it will happen. There will be isolated places where you're going to see chaos because people haven't woken up. But in general, it'll be a calamity, but it won't be the end of the world. It'll be a change. It'll be the end of the old world and the beginning of a new world. That's
so like that song, it'll be the end of the world as we know it, but I feel fine, right? You'll feel fine.
Yeah, and people are learning how to be calm and when chaos is going on all around them, and that's going to be a really important thing to have for people to do, you know, when things start collapsing, which they're collapsing right now. You just stay calm and know that's all we're going to come out the other side a whole lot better off than we are now. You're just going to have to deal with a few inconveniences in the meantime. And if you got to be more responsible in your local society, then get with it, because you can't sit on your butt and expect a bureaucrat to take care of you. You have to be personally responsible. And that's what this awakening is in part about, you know, taking care of your own body, your own health, your own situation, and stop relying on these systems, because the systems are collapsing.
Well, George, we ought to give out our call-in number here, too, before we go.
Yeah, I was going to say, in case you're just joining us, feel free to call and speak to our guest, Dale Pond. Dale is an alternative energy researcher, and you can reach us here at the Blog Talk radio number to talk to Dale. We'll put you straight through to him at 858-769-3317, and press the number 1 when you get in there, so you'll get in the host queue, and I can put you on to him. Again, that's 858-769-3317. So feel free to give a call, and we'll put you right on to Dale Pond to discuss, ask a question, make a suggestion, give your observations about it. Some of you out there probably have had experience with or seen free energy devices at work. Love to Tell us what you found out, what you've experienced. If you've experienced a machine that gives the vibration of love, like the one that Dale makes, the Dynasphere, that with us too. Are these probably. And yeah, what Eddie was just as you might have gathered from the way I'm talking to you, I am an engineer by training, and I've created a device that does a lot of what you're talking about. Does produce. It has some interesting effects. We just did a show about it, about a month ago, wasn't it, Eddie? Something like that.
Yeah, right.
On
our
RBR network. And it's going to be, I don't know, they're syndicating or some, I don't understand the points of broadcasting, but something like that. Let me put them on. Hello, caller. Where is the 352 area code, please?
Florida.
Hey. Well, welcome on board. And you are who?
I'm Nicholas. I'm just a listener. I'm Facebook friends with Dale Pond.
Well, excellent. Well, Nicholas, fire away. Suggestions, comments? Share your own experience.
I want him to elaborate. Oh, sorry. I was just wanting him to elaborate on cavitation and, like, the future potentials that holds. You know, like, basically, essentially, you can just replace nuclear power plants overnight with cavitation if just have them elaborate on that.
Yeah, well,
cavitation, as if what happens with ships' propellers and so on like that.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Oh, yeah.
They've known for some time that the cavitation process releases more energy than it takes to cause that phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
What haven't really done is harness that principle in some kind of machine that would have durability and usability, et cetera. So, yeah, that holds a lot of promise. You know, it's also the disassociation of molecules and atoms to release that energy. So it all goes back to Keeley's original work of disassociation.
Exactly.
You know, splitting the atom.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. What if there was like a means mechanically, you know, using leverage and those principles to like get more energy out mechanically, and then also drive a turbine and, you know, get essentially over.
Well, I don't know.
Well, Nicholas, are you aware of a machine that does use cavitation?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I just studied the phenomenon. I actually came across it in Dale Pond's lectures. That's why I was looking forward to him just elaborating on it and stuff like that.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah, there's some guy, I don't know where he is, he might be in Florida too, that's got a rotary device that cavitates a stream of water and turns it into steam almost instantly. And that's one example. And so that's a mechanical device. You could attempt to duplicate that yourself and see what you learn. I encourage everybody to get busy in their shop and just build something, because that's when you start learning.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking my call. I actually got in very, very quick, so that was surprising. I appreciate taking my call.
Well, thank you, Nicholas. We appreciate your being a listener, and we appreciate your comments on this. I guess what concerns me, Nicholas and Dale, is how we're not really a nation of backyard tinkerers or garage, like I am, tinkerers anymore. As we've lost our industrial base, I would say places like Japan and China and Indonesia are more likely to have somebody who's going to make the next invention out there, because...
Where you could patent it. Yeah.
Well,
I don't think so. I wouldn't go along with that 100%, because I spent 11 years...
Be wrong on that.
Yeah, I spent 11 years in Brazil, and those people are not tinkerers. They do not build things. They don't know how to work screwdrivers and wrenches and... not like America. America is the place where this stuff is really going to happen, because we have a tradition of tinkering with your car or your washing machine or whatever. And
they call it Yankee ingenuity, I guess.
Yeah, and what's the most important thing here for me, having been down in Brazil trying to invent stuff down there, they don't have hardware stores where you can go down and get a 1024 screw. You can't get it.
Really?
Yeah, you can't do it. Only
you
in America.
You had to import your parts from here? No,
we
kidding.
Didn't do anything, because nobody had that kind of funding. But here, there's a hardware store on every corner almost. You can get, and if you can't get it in a hardware store, you can dial 1-800 and get it here overnight.
This country
is unique. There is no place on earth.
Well, I guess what just concerns me, guys, is we used to be a nation where we had large apprenticeship programs. People grew up in an industry. Their dad went to work in a factory. They went to work in a factory. They learned how things worked. They learned physical principles, not just from textbooks, but by actually engaging with it hands-on at an early age. And we had millions of people who grew up knowing to do that. Nowadays, we don't. That industrial base has been sold off by the industrialists, by the investing elite in the country, so they can get a better return on their dollar overseas. So we no longer have that breeding ground for this kind of technology. I guess that's what concerns me.
Yeah, we don't. I've noticed in a few years that I've been making things that there are stuff you can't get today that we could get 10 years ago.
Exactly. I see it drying up, too, in the stuff I build. I mean, try getting polymer. Well, I can get polymers here that are still made here. But try getting electronic parts. When I try to get really fine electronic parts, fewer and fewer of them are made here. There used to be a capacitor company right here in town. I live near Huntsville, Alabama, and I could go down to Mallory Capacitor and get them to custom build something for me if I wanted it. That place closed a long time ago. I think they're being made in Indonesia now. So that's what concerns me. You know, the hands-on thing depended on somebody working in the field. This guy was a millwright during the day. He came home and he tinkered in his garage at night. We don't have millwrights anymore. We don't have these apprenticeship programs where people learned how to build and maintain stuff.
Yeah, another good example would be those Model T Ford magnets. Like, it's very, very hard to get your hands on those, and that's what Edward Leeds Scanlon had used was, you know, they take the V magnets out of an old Model T Ford. Have you heard of that or no?
No,
Iron Horseshoe.
I've heard about using those to make a Jacob's Ladder sort of array, but I haven't heard about them in any other context. Tell us more about that. Hold on, folks. We have another call here. Let me take this other caller here.
Okay.
Hello, listener at 443. Where is your area? Where are you from at 443?
Hi, I'm from Maryland.
Well, hi, and your name is?
Hey, how are you doing?
Just fine.
I didn't mean to interrupt there, but I had a quick question for Dave.
No, you're not interrupting at all. I'm sorry. What's your name?
My name is Abe.
Oh, okay, Abe. Good to meet you. I'm George, and Dale, go ahead. Fire away.
I wanted to say, I've been following Dale's work for some time now, and my question is, I kind of got into a lot of this stuff from the physics perspective, and I noticed that it took on a metaphysical dimension as I got more and more into it, as my paradigm and my mind changed, and that had effects on my reality, ultimately taking me out completely from Newtonian desires. For instance, where I was probably looking into a lot of this stuff in terms of engineering something, the paradigm shifted such that those things became quite superfluous. And you kind of, in some of the things you were talking about, I felt like you were hinting to that fact that the new paradigm in the world will be, we're gradually making those steps in terms of, like you said, you know, alternative financial systems, you know, thinking about engineering things with these different energies. But what I've seen with my own eyes has taken me away from seeing machinery as, well, I see machinery as now just an extension of me. So, and I understand that the body is a piece of machinery and the language is a piece of machinery, which is all being tooled by this energy. So I think now in terms of devices which tune the physical bodies, in terms of some of the work that Robert Beck did, fascinates me in tuning the body, particularly to the Schumann resonance, sympathetically, and sort of the holographic things that come about as a result of understanding this energy in those terms. What I was curious about is, have you had any kind of experience building some of those boxes? He has a lot of Robert Beck put a lot of schematics online for basically recalibrating the human instrument to the energies and understanding once your paradigm shifts, basically, once you get into some of the things you were saying in terms of, you know, getting past these things called belief systems, you know, understanding things mechanically, what the implications of those, there are implications there. I'm trying to language it, but are you sort of following what I'm saying? I don't know if that just came out as word soup or
all
not.
Right,
that's
fine. Let's let Dale address that now, because we got about 7 minutes left.
I'm not 100% certain I understand your question.
I think he was asking about how your perspective shifts.
What I was saying is your perspective can shift, and just not necessarily engineering equipment, but developing a left brain understanding of what these energies are, which is good.
Yeah.
If you're developing a lexicon, which is important, understanding the words, developing a common objective language, and then B, doing things with energy, like Robert Beck was regrowing. He was talking about people regrowing limbs with these sympathetic energies that were tapping into fields of energy, and then on top of that, healing. He was doing a lot of stuff with healing the body with these energies.
Actually, Beck has done a lot of work with polarity, like blood polarity. I've got one of his devices. This Japanese inventor based his machine.
Well, what's happening
Well,
what's happening is we're moving from a paradigm where we believe in separation and victimization.
And there
we'll
you
say,
go.
Well, I'm this germ or that bacteria, and I need to go to somebody else, some other authority to help me solve my problem. What we're doing is we're changing that, and we're saying, no, I'm responsible for me. I'm beginning to study and learn and understand my body and my mind, and I'm beginning to understand the difference between Newtonian physics and scalar physics, and that's the cusp. That's where we're moving.
And my concern is with the rest of the world that doesn't understand this yet. Because I think the veil is going to come crashing down, and there's a lot of people that still think in terms of separation, in terms of developing machines, and they're not really thinking about resonating with the planet, resonating with the cosmos, and the implications of that.
I think what Dale was saying, Abe, is that it's pretty much inevitable that the current system is not sustainable. It does crash down, and when it does, these new technologies will emerge. Did I get that right, Dale?
Yeah, more
that
or less.
Really could be
people are learning to be responsible, and they are learning. Not everybody knows it today, but down the road, more and more people. This growth of understanding is expanding exponentially as we speak.
And by the way,
I don't think people understand the implications of that because it's so exponentially huge what you're talking about.
Abe, for what it's worth, department, let me just give you some information here. If you'll check out the website, brind-gen.net, it stands for brindgenerators.net, brind-gen.net. I have a whole raft of free energy devices on there which actually do modify your spiritual state. They are not expensive. They do work. And so there are a lot of people working on this kind of thing. I'm literally a kind of backyard tinkerer.
Instrument, I think you can take it further. You can go inward with it and understand that the body is the ultimate instrument. Once it's tuned properly, things change. Develop altered states, and they develop I don't know. For me, I think what's important, and when I see Dale's work, is we're developing a common language for talking about this. We can get out of the Newtonian frame of mind in discussing things, because these are very paradoxical ideas, and it's trying to embrace. I think the issue is how do we embrace the paradox that these issues bring about.
What Dale is developing is kind of a Rosetta Stone, where somebody who came up in the Newtonian type of education, like I did, and somebody who's done free energy work can talk to each other. And that's so, so very important if we're going to see progress and put our heads together on all this.
And the caller is right. It is an introduction to paradox upon paradox. And that's the adventure. That's the big mystery. That's where we're all going. Now, you can't understand Keeley's physics from a Newtonian left brain perspective. You have to go into a higher mind perspective. And that's the big problem.
But we do need a language. We do need a common language. That's what I think we're struggling with. We need to be able to talk to each other.
And I think that's what Dale is creating, is this Rosetta Stone, this common language. Anyway, folks, let me just put it out there for all our listeners who are intrigued by something you heard tonight, SVPWIKI. Is this correct, Dale?
That's correct.
SVP, Sympathetic Vibratory Physics, SVPWIKI.com?
.com, yes.
Okay. That will get you the information on what he's got. And you've got some lectures up elsewhere, don't you? I mean, if you just go Dale Pond and YouTube, you put out some very nice lectures about some of this stuff. So
yeah, I've got
check him
YouTube channel and a Facebook channel and the wiki.
Anyway, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to express that sort of concern I have for people that are shifting out of the old paradigm into the new one, and that there is going to be an exponential change.
Abe, let's hope we come out of it as peacefully and progressively and harmoniously as possible, okay?
That is my humble prayer.
Let's hold that as our common intention here and hope it manifests, all right? Thank you so much for your call, Abe. Appreciate having you as a listener.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir. Good night.
Yeah, well, George, for just about a minute or so left,
We got about a minute 30, so please wrap up with whatever you'd like to leave our audiences with on this, and then I'll close out the program. Go ahead, Dale.
Don't be afraid of the future and the changes that are coming, because they're all going to come out good. The old paradigm is crashing. If you're invested in that, then get out now and start looking where you can do some good. Put your money where it'll do some good. Put your time and attention where it'll build a better world. That's what we're here for. So let's make a better world. We don't have to be victims.
Man,
of the
old. That's awesome. Well, every weeknight at 6 p.m., Night Search brings you the unusual, the bizarre, the otherworldly, the side of a story you just might have heard, might not have heard anywhere else. Catch us right here on Blog Talk Radio.
For archived copies of this and prior shows, look for them by date and topic at www.blogtalkradio.com/EMIDDY. That'll take you straight into Night Search Radio. And again, folks, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Dale Pond. It's been a pleasure. And you certainly have a very stimulating area of inquiry. We really appreciate your input. And remember,
I have to say, I'm totally intrigued by it. I'm going to be checking that out.
It's outrageous
information. Thank you. I enjoyed it myself.
It's outrageous information, but it's all true. Good night, Dale. Good night, Eddie. Good night, folks.